From Midtown Manhattan, New York City, to the world, Tom Sullivan is on now.
Yep, here we are. Welcome to the Big Radio Show. Happy Friday to you on this Friday the 13th of July, 2018. My name is Tom Sullivan, and if you're superstitious because it's Friday the 13th, I don't know what you think about this indictment that rolled out of the Mueller investigation, but it names, dates, places, titles, missions, unit numbers of these Russians who have been running a campaign to get involved with and mess with our election in 2016. So, to me, this is, and the problem with this is these people will never show up in court, so there will never be a hearing. And the other problem, which a lot of you are pointing out on my Twitter feed, is do you think this had anything to do with the president about ready to meet with Vladimir Putin on Monday? And if so, how does the president handle this? Some of you have said he should cancel, forget it, protest the thing. Others have said no, go in there and go at him. And others are saying, yeah, but Trump will not go at him. And there's we'll get to that in a minute, but the president was with Theresa May this morning. Everything was wonderful, wonderful, wonderful standing in front of Theresa May. But last night he gave an interview to the Sun newspaper in London, blasting Theresa May. So it comes down to Donald Trump's style is he is going to attack you or do whatever he wants to do until he meets you face-to-face. And when he meets you face-to-face, he's going to be Mr. Gladhand. Right? I mean, it's his M.O. So I don't think there will be any fireworks from a meeting with Putin. And a number of you have sent me tweets going, hey, wouldn't have Trump had the better hand if none of this had been made public? At least for now. I'm with those of you that believe that this, why did they release this today? If Trump knew about it on Monday of this previous Monday, then he could go into the meeting with Putin and go, hey, how's it going, Vlad? Oh, by the way, what do you guys do with the computers hacking the Democrats and all that? No, comrade, we did nothing like that. Well, here's some facts that I have right here that I believe you did. Call them on it. I think it's always an upper hand in a negotiation to know information that they don't know that you know. In other words, have the answers to your questions. Ask the leading questions for which you know the answers. See what they say. I don't expect Putin to tell the truth. Do you? Phone number is 855-295-6600. Here was some questions at the news conference today with Rosenstein. He was asked, how can Russia release documents to influence the election without influencing the election?
I know you've talked about the fact that, in your view, the evidence doesn't show any votes were changed as a result of this hacking. But you did say that a company used as a pass-through coordinated with these defendants to enhance the timing of the release and the impact on the election. Can you talk a little bit about what the evidence you have shows in that respect?
So what I've talked about today is what is alleged in the indictment. We know that, according to the allegations in the indictment, the goal of the conspirators was to have an impact in the election. What impact they may have had, or what their motivation may have been independently of what's required to prove this offense, is a matter of speculation. That's not our responsibility. What I said is there's no allegation in the indictment about it, and that's not our charge.
Yeah, but it's a great question. Is, well, wait a minute. So that you're charging them with trying to interfere with the election, but they did not interfere with the election. because you said no votes were changed. The outcome of the election was not changed or impacted. And that's been my belief all along, is, again, I'm going back over old ground, but I do not believe that the Russians, through releasing these emails that were embarrassing to John Podesta, embarrassing to a number of the Hillary staffers, that anybody threw their hands up and said, that's it, I'm voting for Trump now. I've been behind Hillary the whole time. I don't see it. I don't see anybody switching sides because of some embarrassing emails. Where was the one, I forget her name, the communication woman for Hillary, and Valerie somebody or other, and not Valerie Jarrett. There's another one that was part of it. She was the communication spokeswoman. But she was complaining something about the Catholics and the Catholic vote. Okay, maybe a few Catholics got their nose bent out of shape. Hey, what do you mean? What are you talking about? But I don't think a bunch of Catholics went and said, that's it, I'm not voting for Hillary anymore. I'm going to vote for Trump. I just don't see it. David Shalane over at CNN says, it still has not been proven that any Americans knowingly interacted with Russians.
But we should underline and note, as no doubt the president will, Rosenstein was crystal clear to state, no evidence here today is being presented that any American knew they were communicating with Russians. No evidence here today was that Americans had knowledge of any kind of involvement with this. And that is key. We, to this point in this entire investigation, that has not yet come forward, which has been the crux of this.
Wow, that's David Shalane over at CNN. Going, wait a minute, where are the Americans that are being indicted on that were involved with the campaign and collusion with the Russians? There aren't any. But Jeffrey Toobin, the legal guy over at CNN, says, well, hold on, folks, because Roger Stone and WikiLeaks are clearly mentioned in the indictment without their names being mentioned.
As a legal matter, this indictment is probably all we are going to learn about this side of the case, because these defendants are in Russia, and we don't have an extradition treaty that would cover this kind of behavior. So there is unlikely ever to be any sort of trial. Obviously, the great unanswered question is, were there Americans who were involved in this activity in any way that indicates the collusion with the Trump administration, the Trump campaign? If you read the indictment carefully, it's clear that organization one is WikiLeaks, and it is somewhat surprising that WikiLeaks was not indicted. There's also a reference to a person in touch with the Trump campaign, and that certainly fits the description of Roger Stone. I think both WikiLeaks and Roger Stone will be relieved to know that they were not indicted today, but I don't think they are necessarily out of the woods. The extent of this is really extraordinary. I mean, the extent of the Russian effort to help Donald Trump win the election is extraordinary, but what remains a mystery and unresolved by this indictment is whether there was any participation or even knowledge of the Trump campaign that this effort was taking place.
Well, Jeffrey Toobin wants this to have a collusion, have Russians interfering, colluding with, consulting with, working with Trump campaign people like Roger Stone, and he wants that in the worst way. But Roger Stone is not mentioned in this. Maybe he will be someday, but right now, no. And he's befuddled about the fact that, well, organization one, it sure sounds like WikiLeaks, but WikiLeaks wasn't indicted. So why? Maybe because your assumptions are not accurate. You're getting the cart before the horse there, Mr. Toobin. But he goes on to say red flags are raised that the Trump campaign may have had interaction, but there just isn't enough evidence to bring charges.
It is certainly accurate to say that there is a tremendous amount of smoke indicating that there was some sort of Trump campaign knowledge or involvement with this. But criminal cases are not built on smoke. They're built on fire. And certainly in this indictment, there is no even allegation, much less proof, that the Trump campaign was involved in this hacking activity.
Yeah. He wants it in the worst way. They just don't have the evidence. Well, if they don't have the evidence, then last time I checked, they cannot charge you with a crime. Michael Zeldin speaks up and says it's up to the DOJ to figure out if people knew that they were interacting with Russia or not.
Of the individuals who had communication with Guccifer and DC leaks, they are reporters, they are state-registered lobbyists, they are an online political news source, they're individuals and individual connected with the Trump campaign. It is this that becomes the follow-on work of the prosecutors to determine whether or not this was an innocent receipt of information unknowing that it was stolen, or whether or not the prosecutors can say, you should have had knowledge, you were willfully blind, and therefore you are legally chargeable as an accessor.
No. He's pushing it, too. It's the burden of proof is upon the state. Always has been. You're innocent until proven guilty. And this one, Cut 16, Matt Miller, who is not a fan of Donald Trump. He's a former Justice Department spokesman in the Obama years. Says that the timing of the indictment is a way for Mueller to push back at the president and Mueller's critics.
We've talked for months about how the Justice Department and the White House don't coordinate on criminal investigations. There's a big exception to that, and that's national security investigations. And with a typical president who is defending the country and who is responding to an attack on the country by trying to hold those responsible for the attack accountable, you might coordinate with the White House the announce of this indictment so the president could go into this meeting with a new piece of ammunition in his pocket, that he could go in and say, you know, hold this indictment up to Vladimir Putin and say, look, this is the hard evidence that you attacked our elections. Of course, I don't think anyone thinks that Donald Trump's going to do that in a meaningful way. And so I have to question whether the timing of this indictment was both for a way for the special counsel and for Rod Rosenstein to push back against the really inappropriate attacks, and also if it was a little bit of a way to force the president's hand as he goes into this meeting on Monday.
Well, he would like it too. But I got to ask Matt Miller, you talk about a president that would be defending our country. What about your boss? What did he do? Nothing.
Tom Sullivan.
So Lance sends me an email, and he says, Hillary's 30,000 emails. I guess the Democrats don't want Putin to hand over to Trump at their meeting the 30,000 missing emails from Hillary. Well, that came out in kind of a backward way because... Well, let's go back. This is July of 2016. In fact, it was July 27th of 2016, where candidate Trump asked Russia to find Hillary Clinton's missing emails. Listen.
What do I have to get involved with Putin for? I have nothing to do with Putin. I've never spoken to him. I don't know anything about him other than he will respect me. He doesn't respect our president. And if it is Russia, which is probably not, nobody knows who it is, but if it is Russia, it's really bad for a different reason, because it shows how little respect they have for our country when they would hack into a major party and get everything. But it would be interesting to see. I will tell you this. Russia, if you're listening, I hope you're able to find the 30,000 emails that are missing. I think you will probably be rewarded mightily by our press.
Well, in the indictment, page 7, it says the conspirators spearfished individuals affiliated with the Clinton campaign on or about July 27, 2016, the exact date that candidate Trump said, hey, can you find the 30,000 emails? The conspirators attempted after hours to spearfish for the first time email accounts at a domain hosted by a third-party provider and used by Clinton's personal office. Her personal office, not the campaign office, her personal office. At or around the same time, they also targeted 26 email addresses at the domain for the Clinton campaign. So it sounds, he was spoofing, in my opinion, but it sounds like they were listening. And they said, oh, hey, why don't we try and do that? Why don't we try and find the other emails that she said she personally reviewed and had nothing to do with State Department business? Nothing, I tell you. So, I mean, I don't know where this is going to go. I don't know if, do you think we're going to wind up with a whole bunch of Americans being indicted? Because this one specifically excludes Americans. I mean, we already played for you the fact that Rosenstein said that the Americans did not know that the people that were contacting them were Russians. So, let's go to cut 7. This is the other part, I think, out of all of this, we still need to defend ourselves against any foreign power. And I don't want to take my eyes off, we're focusing on Russia. I wouldn't take my eyes off of China, particularly North Korea, add them to the list. But cut 7, this is Rosenstein at the announcement today, saying that the indictment does not suggest that votes were changed or affected the election.
There's no allegation in this indictment that any American citizen committed a crime. There's no allegation that the conspiracy changed the vote count or affected any election result.
Yeah, no American committed a crime. So the pundits are all saying, well, and Jeffrey Toobin probably the loudest of all of them, yeah, but it sure sounds like Roger Stone, it sure sounds like WikiLeaks, and I don't know why they weren't indicted. I'll tell you, I don't know why. Well, because they don't have the evidence, Mr. Lawyer. So I'm not quite sure if this is going to ever lead to an American. We don't know. Being indicted in all of this investigation. I think a lot of course, the investigation was supposed to focus on where people in the Trump campaign working with the Russians, hand in hand, glove in glove. But I think more important one at this point is, what are we doing? And I know they can't tell us because of they give away the store. But what are they doing to protect our nation from Russia, China, North Korea, and any other bad actor out there from interfering with our elections this year, 2 years from now, at any time? And I want to believe, I have trust in our cybersecurity people that they are working on that. JPG sends me an email, says, they have computer nerds, we have lawyers. We have very smart lawyers. They have very smart computer nerds. That worries me too, JPG. We'll be right back.
First Amendment 101. You're listening to Tom Sullivan.
Yeah, busy news day here on this Friday, the 13th of July. So, this was a real head spinner. So, this is one of the things that drives me crazy about Donald Trump. He goes over to England. He gets there last night. He gives an interview, a one-on-one interview with the Sun newspaper. The Sun is owned by Rupert Murdoch, the owner of News Corp, the owner of Fox News, the owner of the Wall Street Journal, the owner of a lot of things. And so in this interview, the reporter very clearly, as most print reporters will do, is they will put their recording device there on the table. And he recorded the conversation with President Trump. And during that conversation, the president was very clear that he did not like what Theresa May was doing. I mean, he said, look at her approach to Brexit. He said, I don't know what you're going to do, but whatever you're going to do is okay with me. That's what he said this morning. But last night, the newspaper said Theresa May's plans for a close post-Brexit relationship with the European Union will probably kill prospects for a trade deal with the U.S. Here's the problem with Theresa May. She wasn't for Brexit. David Cameron wasn't for Brexit. So when the people of Great Britain voted, yep, we're in favor of Brexit, David Cameron said, I'm out of here. And they shoved Theresa May into the office of Prime Minister. But she wasn't for it either. So here she is. She is supposed to implement this big breakaway from the European Union for lots of good reasons. I understand why if I was a British person, I would have voted to break away from the European Union a long time ago. So she is trying to deliver on something that she really doesn't want to do. So you can bet if you have assigned somebody a job and they don't want to do it, and they made it very clear they don't want to do it, and you say, you got to do the job, and they say, okay, begrudgingly, what kind of job do you think they're going to do? Half-baked job at the very best. So that's what President Trump was complaining about. That's what he was complaining about, is that you really don't want a full breakaway from the European Union. If you don't break away from the European Union and fully break away from them, then the trade deal between the U.S. and the U.K. is off. We're not going to do any trade deal. Now, back to Theresa May. She desperately needs the U.S. to do a wide-open trade deal with Great Britain, because she's going to have a hard time doing trade with countries in the European Union, because she just divorced them. She just left them. And now she wants to do business with them, and they're going to say, forget it. So she needs somebody to sell her products, her British products, to someone. And sure would be nice if the biggest marketplace in the world said, yeah, we'd like to do business here. We'll buy your stuff. So Donald Trump last night was clearly pointing out she's not really into this whole thing about breaking away from the European Union. And unless she is, we don't have a deal. We do not have a deal. That was last night. Then, this morning, there they are at the Blenheim Castle. And this was the president's opening remarks with Theresa May standing right next to him.
It is my true honor to join you at this remarkable setting. Truly magnificent, as we celebrate the special relationship between our two countries. On behalf of the American people, I want to thank you for your very gracious hospitality. Thank you very much, Theresa. Last night, Melania and I were delighted to join you and Philip for dinner at the magnificent Blenheim Palace. It was a wonderful and memorable evening that we will not soon forget. It was really something very special. Today, it's a true privilege to visit historic Chequers that I've heard so much about and read so much about growing up in history class, and to continue our conversation, which has really proceeded along rapidly and well over the last few days.
Yeah. So everything's great. We had this wonderful relationship. Isn't this terrific? Last night, he was blasting her out of the park. She is not up for the job. She's doing a lousy job. We're not going to have some trade deal. So then he turns around, and after saying, oh, you're wonderful, you're terrific, and everything else, and we spent a lot of time together, and oh, man, it was like a love fest. He turns around and says, okay, so once you get out of Brexit, I'm fine with whatever you want to do on trade.
I also want to thank Prime Minister May for pursuing fair and reciprocal trade with the United States. Once the Brexit process is concluded, and perhaps the UK has left the EU, I don't know what they're going to do, but whatever you do is okay with me. That's your decision. Whatever you're going to do is okay with us. Just make sure we can trade together. That's all that matters. The United States looks forward to finalizing a great bilateral trade agreement with the United Kingdom.
Last night, she's doing a lousy job. We're not going to do a trade deal today. Whatever you want to do, we're fine. We're good. So they have this joint news conference at Blenheim, and the media there, British media, American media, and this reporter says, hey, what about the fact that you criticized her up one side and down the other last night?
Thank you very much, Prime Minister and Mr. President. Laura Koonsberg, BBC News. Mr. President, you seem rather to have changed your tune from what you said earlier this week when you said that on the current Brexit plan, that would probably kill the possibility of a trade deal with the UK. Our countries are meant to have a special relationship, yet you publicly criticised the Prime Minister's policy and her personally for not listening to you this week. Is that really the behaviour of a friend?
Well, maybe I'll go first because I didn't criticize the Prime Minister. I have a lot of respect for the Prime Minister. And unfortunately, there was a story that was done, which was, you know, generally fine, but it didn't put in what I said about the Prime Minister. And I said tremendous things. And fortunately, we tend to record stories now, so we have it for your enjoyment if you'd like it. But we record when we deal with reporters. It's called fake news. You know, we solve a lot of problems with the good old recording instrument. But what happens is that, look, the Prime Minister, as I really just said, she's going to make a decision as to what she's going to do. The only thing I ask of Theresa is that we make sure we can trade, that we don't have any restrictions, because we want to trade with the UK, and the UK wants to trade with us.
I don't understand. I don't understand that part of him. Not only did he say he recorded it, but the Sun also recorded it. And no, they did not leave anything out. And no, he did not say tremendous things about her that were not put in. So I don't know how to read the man on things like this. I don't know what. I know there's a lot of you that think the guy's up on a pedestal. I look at stuff like this and I just shake my head. He clearly beat the bejeebies out of her yesterday, and today said, no, I didn't criticize her. We have it recorded. Yeah, well, so do they. 855-295-6600. We'll be right back.
The real world and you meet here. You're listening to Tom Sullivan.
I find Donald Trump fascinating, like many of you, whether you love him or hate him, but he's a fascinating guy. And usually I try to figure out, okay, what is his, what's the card up his sleeve? What is the super strategy that he's coming up with? Trying to figure out why he does things or says things. But this is like an alternative universe. And I don't understand him. Why did he not stand up to her like he did when he was talking to the Sun newspaper? Here's just a little soundbite of what the Sun newspaper recorded in the interview with Donald Trump from last night. Listen.
I agree with, she didn't listen to me. I think the deal that she's striking is not what the people voted on. It's a much different deal than the people voted on. It was not the deal that was in the referendum.
Yeah. She didn't, and to be fair to the president, Theresa May on Monday of this week, the House of Commons were ready to have a vote of no confidence, basically to call for another election to get rid of her because of the fact that she is not following through with what the British people voted for, which was an absolute clean exit from European Union. And so I get that Donald Trump said she didn't do what I thought she should do. I told her what she should do. She's not doing it. And she's not doing what the people voted for. So he was complaining, and rightfully so, and I don't know why he didn't complain in front of her today. I really don't. So this, Theresa May's standing there, and the president says, oh, no, we got along great. We have a great relationship. Everything's fine. I'll do whatever she wants to do. Whatever. Just let me know whatever decision you make on trade. So Theresa May, all of a sudden, starts sounding like a real hawk, going, yeah, wow, we need to get rid of the European Union. And she went down the list of why it was important to break away from the European Union. All of a sudden, she's all of a sudden for Brexit. Listen.
Let me be very clear about this. We will be leaving the European Union, and we are leaving on the 29th of March, 2019. As we leave the European Union, we will be delivering on what people voted for, an end to free movement, an end to sending vast amounts of money to the European Union every year, an end to the jurisdiction of the European Court of Justice here in the United Kingdom, coming out of the Common Fisheries Policy, coming out of the Common Agricultural Policy, and ensuring, by coming out of the Customs Union, that we can have an independent trade policy that enables us to negotiate trade deals with the United States and with other countries around the rest of the world. Well, that's here, what the British people voted for, and that's what we will be delivering.
Here's to you. That's all of a sudden she's got a different sound, because she was mumbling about, I don't want to leave the European Union. Now it's like, I can't leave them fast enough. So everybody's being a two-bit phony on this whole relationship between the U.S. and Great Britain. 855-295-6600. Mike, thanks for waiting. Welcome. You're on the Tom Sullivan Show.
Yeah, hi. Hi. I don't understand. What I'm hoping is I can find an intelligent Trump supporter who continues to hear him do these kinds of things, and to try to understand why the supporters that are intelligent come up with their own facts, not just stuff that's fed to them, and can say, yeah, this is why I support him. I mean, what I've heard is he always says what he says he's going to do, speaks his mind, and yet, whether it's May or Trudeau, where he has this great conversation, and then the next day he tweets him, not in front of him, but on Twitter, and he continues to do this with other world leaders, and it's totally inconsistent with the conversations are based in fact.
I don't understand the strategy, but I will tell you, Mike, there's things about him I don't like, there's things about him I do like. And so I guess I could answer part of your question. I do like what he's doing about being tougher on immigration. I do like what he's doing about saying, look at Congress, do your job. You're the ones who are supposed to do the immigration law, the DACA kids, all of that never should have been in the White House. The tax bill, I don't know if it's going to do a lot, but it's better than a poke in the eye. I'll go down a lot of things. The deregulation that is being done, I'm for all of that. So there's some of your answers about why I support the president on those things. I just find this kind of conversation baffles me. That's all. So I can be baffled and still support a lot of things. I'm not in love with any politician, so I can like parts of them without liking the whole thing. That's my answer.
And I appreciate that about you, that you're very consistent in that you speak your mind regardless of bias or Republican or Democrat, and kind of call a spade. But I think a lot of times he'll say things, and the immigration is a good example of it, with what happened with the kids and this and that and the other, that he doesn't necessarily have a policy. He doesn't necessarily have a plan. He seems to kind of go by the seat of his shorts. And some of them are great ideas, but some of them are half-baked, and he doesn't have either support or a policy or anything in place, or else you'd understand as you said earlier and right here, you'd understand, oh, I see what he's doing with May, or I see what he's doing with Canada, or with immigration. This is what his plan is, so it's a good strategy. It makes sense, but he doesn't seem to have that.
Yeah, I think that's the way he ran his business, but if you really think about it, he wasn't the CEO of a multinational corporation. He was a small businessman who happened to have a pretty big small business, but he ran it himself. There wasn't anybody else. So now he's got, I think, some weak links that are his advisors, and I think it gets him in trouble. Wait until the Brexit deal comes through, which is, I believe, March of next year is when they officially break away from the European Union, and let's see what the trade deal is that the president is willing to sign off on with Great Britain. Well, because you have no idea, as we sit here today, what that's going to be, even though he said whatever you do is okay with me. You can't count on it. No idea.
Yeah.
Anyway, Mike, thank you. I appreciate your call. Oh, listen to this. So the networks are all showing tens of thousands of people are in the streets of London protesting. Oh, my gosh, will there be violence? Will there be? Here's a MSNBC correspondent who's supposed to describe how scary everything is, and this is how he describes the protest.
You know, Chris, this is where the protest is going to start. We'll give you a view from above at who's here right now. I'd say around 10,000 people. This is Regent Street. I think a lot of Americans probably recognize this from the Christmas photos of all the lights. This is a shopping area. This is a commercial area. But this is also the international city. So we've seen so many different causes coming to light here, causes from racism to global warming, not just anti-Trump, obviously, sentiments. I do want to show you the security. The police right now are standing off. It is a totally jovial mood. It feels a little bit like the
jovial mood, not anti-Trump.